Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be talking on several subjects involving our well-being. We're going to explore in depth biological dentistry. Now, what does that mean? You're going to find out in just a moment. We're going to talk about a naturopathic approach to biological dentistry and mercury and autism, all types of things involving our oral hygiene. Then we're going to look at medicine of the possible, meaning innovative treatments for Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, stroke, brain trauma, and much more, with Dr. Rima Lebo. So you're going to see how, in effect, a non-drug approach can help all these conditions. Very innovative and exciting concepts that we're going to be talking about. So please stay with us on that. Let me bring you some of the latest in the area of health and nutrition update information. One of the things I've noticed in the latest round of Senate gubernatorial and presidential elections is that everyone is expecting the government to do something for them. More than ever before, we are living almost an exclusively entitlement-based reality. I find that disconcerting. I find it extremely disappointing that the older generation, more than ever, is saying, do for us. I look at it from a humanistic point of view, a humanitarian point of view, but also what it means when we so overwhelm virtually all of our systems with this idea that we don't have to prevent anything, we don't have to be conscientious, we can do whatever we want, whenever we want, and when we get ourselves sick, it's the government's responsibility, hence it's my citizens' responsibility, it's my next-door neighbor's responsibility to pay for my care and maintenance. I think that's extraordinarily selfish. I believe that if a person's out there smoking their whole life and gets cancer, that I should pay for it? I don't think so. Should they be allowed to go in these entitlements on these multi-million-dollar lawsuits? I also don't think so. I believe that we are a highly litigious society. More often than not, we'd rather look at a lawsuit to provide us with our future than we would for our own efforts, more so than ever before. Not only are the lawyers self-interested in perpetuating this, but individuals look for every opportunity to allow themselves to take a shortcut. And what's happening is that everywhere we look, we don't have a single preventative program in place. Not one. I looked. I went to every single website. I looked at every government program. And their idea of prevention is really more drugs. Preventing cancer, take chemotherapy. That's not the answer. So I just want to quote Thomas Jefferson, something for you to think about. When all you hear politicians do now, virtually it's just all outspend the next guy. No, all outspending. No, you don't even have to get out of bed in the morning. We'll make sure that you never have to do anything the rest of your life. We'll take care of you. That's what we're the government. We're here to take care of every one of your needs. And there's people going, yeah, I like that. Just let me sit in a trailer park in front of a television all day long and watch Oprah. God, what a life. Well, I say get a life. Because there's more to this than having someone else be responsible. And you know the interesting part of this, and I don't know if any of you have ever thought of this. Those of us who are conscious in our spiritual approach, emotional approach, intellectual approach, and physical approach, environmental approach, we get no subsidies. Nobody gives a damn about us preventing illnesses that cost no one anything. We're not given any help. We're not given any positive input. In fact, if anything, we have been historically mocked and ridiculed. Now, think of that for a moment. For those of you who have gotten up each day and tried to make your life work, taken responsibility for yourself, tried to make it a better world, you've been denigrated. There's no government support for you. For instance, if you wanted to go and have your mercury amalgam filled or pulled and replaced so you could help prevent neurological damage, do they subsidize that? No. In fact, they'll attack your doctor for doing it, call you a quack for trying it. If you take vitamins and antioxidants throughout the day, so you don't get a cold and don't miss days off, are you given some credit on your insurance? No. If you drink healthy water, eat healthy food, does anyone say, job well done, I appreciate what you're doing, let us help you in some way? Never. But take drugs, drink, smoke, stick it up your ass, and see if they help you. Everybody bends over to help the losers in our society. We can't do enough to subjugate ourselves to our own particular and absolutely perverse sense of remorse by trying to show that we are redeeming our lives misspent, misplaced, by helping people who have chosen to have no respect for us or themselves. Isn't it interesting? Of course, that's completely politically incorrect on the ultimate politically correct venue. And by God, don't think that non-commercial means that you're politically correct. But we can't get into that because you would see how quickly I would be censored. Thomas Jefferson said, a government that is large enough to supply everyone everything you need is large enough to take everything you have. Remember that. And as to George Bush and all of his supporters, it really is irrelevant that it's him, is what he represents. He and Gore are the same. I could spend as much time on either one talking about the promises they've made that have nothing to do with the quality of your life. But there was someone who just made some comments, Roland Capers. I think it's worth taking a little careful look. The great state of Texas, courtesy of Lynn Ahrens. The state of Texas, under the leadership of Governor George Bush, is ranked 50th in spending on teacher salaries, 49th in spending on the environment, 48th in per capita funding for public health, 47th in delivery of social services, 42nd in child support collections, 41st in per capita spending on public education, 5th in percentage of population living in poverty, 1st, number 1 state in America in air and water pollution, number 1 in percentage of poor working parents without insurance, number 1 in percentage of children without health insurance, and of course, number 1 in executions, an average 1 every 2 weeks. No one seems to pay attention to those issues. Then just think of what the country's in for in the future. This comes from Jonathan Carr Brown and Martin Messenger. And it's about Gulf War Syndrome. Now there's new evidence, and I'll quote verbatim from the Sunday Times of London. New evidence that Gulf War Syndrome exists and was caused by radiation poisoning will be revealed today by a former American Army colonel who was at the center of his government's attempts to diagnose the illness. Dr. Durovic will tell a conference of eminent nuclear scientists in Paris that, quote, tens of thousands of British and American soldiers are dying from radiation from depleted uranium shells fired during the Gulf War. The findings will undermine the British and American government's claims that Gulf War syndrome does not exist and intensify pressure from veterans on both sides of the Atlantic for compensation. Durovic, who is a professor of nuclear medicine at Georgetown University and the former head of the nuclear medicine at the U.S. Army's Veterans Affairs Medical Facility in Delaware, will tell the conference that he and his team of American and Canadian scientists have discovered life-threatening high levels of depleted uranium in Gulf veterans 10 years after the Desert War. His findings, which have been verified by 4 independent experts, is embarrassing for the Ministry of Defense and the American Defense Department, which have consistently refused to test Gulf veterans for depleted uranium. Durovic will tell the European Association of Nuclear Medicine that tests on 17 veterans have shown depleted uranium in their urine and bones of 70% of them. I might mention that as an aside, once you have this depleted uranium in your cell, it's not as if after 2 or 3 months your body excretes it. Some of this will be in their bones, in their lung tissue, for the rest of their life. And just one tiny little speck, virtually microscopic, of depleted uranium would be like a chest x-ray going off every second. Doesn't And it doesn't help that we have not been honest about this. But then again, the government doesn't want to be found responsible for making these mistakes. Separately, from Angelo, the class of 99 from our health support group. Dear Gary, keeping the weight off down 100 pounds and also building muscle. I finished the 30K race walk championship on October 21st in 4 hours and 16 minutes. And I also completed my second New York City marathon in almost 1 hour better than I did last year. Getting better every day. Angelo. Good for you, Angelo. This comes from CompuServe. Cold sores, which are a form of herpes, linked to heart attacks. Three different medical studies to be published today strengthen the theory that infections are linked with heart disease, specifically those people who have herpes simplex, the virus that causes cold sores, are twice as likely to have a heart attack or die from a heart attack as people who don't have herpes simplex. Another study found the bacteria linked with heart disease ride into the circulatory system in immune system cells. The final story found that those who have symptoms of infection have poor blood flow and so are more likely to suffer the blood clots that cause heart attacks and strokes. Quote, infections are of interest in part because of the increasing attention paid to the role of inflammation in heart disease, says Dr. David Siskovic, professor of medicine and epidemiology at the University of Washington, Seattle, who led the first study. Now, why I found this important is for the following reason. For a long time, we have been told that herpes is really, well, it's so common, everyone has it, what's the big deal? In fact, I've had people in our health support groups or people I've counseled that once we provide a protocol, they'll go to their family physician, they'll look at the protocol and say, this is ridiculous. You don't need to have any of this stuff because herpes is not a problem. They said Coxsackie was not a problem. They said Epstein-Barr was not a problem. They said adenovirus was not a problem. And they said cytomegalovirus was not a problem. Now we know that they're all problems, serious problems. And all of them can exacerbate or lead to local inflammation, and that can cause serious debilitating disease. So I just want you to know that for those of you who have been on anti-inflammatory programs and antiviral programs, you're way ahead of the curve. Because they do count, and they are serious, and they will ultimately undermine your health in many different ways. And now here's three studies just proving that. Let's now go over and say hello to our first guest. My first guest is Dr. Linda Crocker, C-R-O-C-K-E-R. She is with the Emanuel Center for Health in Roswell, Georgia, and she holds a doctorate in naturopathy. And she's here to talk about biologic dentistry. Nice to have you with us today, Linda.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for inviting me.
Linda, first, what is biologic dentistry?
Well, a biologic dentist is a dentist that looks at how the teeth and the mouth relate to the health of the whole body. In Europe, it's been long accepted and known that the correlations have been made that 70 to 80% of degenerative diseases come from the mouth and the teeth, and often undiagnosed infections. Not only what we have in the mouth as far as dental fillings, as far as amalgam fillings, which I'm sure you've probably warned people about the dangers of mercury fillings, but also problems like cavitations, which are undiagnosed infections where people have had a tooth pulled or where they've had a root canal or a root canal. A root canal itself has a lot of very, very potent toxins and that can cause just vast problems with the immune system. And a biologic dentist understands, number one, that the mouth is part of the whole body. Surprisingly enough, dentistry in this country is not based on science or on research. There have never been any studies done to prove that mercury is safe. There have never been any studies done to prove that root canals are safe. There's never been any studies done to show that that pulling a tooth is safe, or that it's, you know, not safe, or it is safe. The teeth all have connections with the organs in our body, and it's not unusual when we find somebody with prostate cancer to find that they have a root canal or infection in one of their front two teeth. And the European doctors realize this, and I was at a seminar this weekend in Phoenix, in Scottsdale, Arizona, the Enderlane seminars. It was put on by Pleomorphic. And Dr. Tom Rau was there from Paracelsus in Switzerland. Paracelsus is a large clinic, and they treat 240 patients a day. A lot of patients from the U.S. go there for cancer. Their cancer statistics for curing cancer are astounding. It was interesting to hear that they had five doctors on staff, Gary, and four dentists. Because the dentists, you know, they won't treat cancer, they won't treat degenerative disease without treating the teeth and the gum and the infections in the mouth. So that's what a biological dentist does. And in my practice, we always evaluate the infection in the mouth and the undiagnosed infections. And we have a patient now that has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and his mouth is full of root canals and serious infections. And he's been to some of the top clinics here in the U.S. for cancer treatment, and the cancer is back, and he's in stage four now. And it was just amazing to me that he had not been evaluated for this infection in his mouth. And he's on his way down to a surgeon we work with, Doug Phillips, in West Palm today to have his mouth cleaned up. So that's what a biological dentist does, and what he is, and how he works, as opposed to dentists who don't understand this connection.
Okay, what I'd like to do, thank you, I appreciate that answer. How does the health of our teeth and gums affect the health and overall of our whole body? And what adverse health effects can mercury amalgams cause? And how are mercury fillings related to autism in the brain?
Oh boy, this is a huge topic. Root canals, a doctor by the name of Dr. Weston Price has done an awful lot of research on root canals, and it's been duplicated by some major universities and by a lot of researchers presently. And the materials that they use in root canals are toxic to the body and allow that dead tooth or that infected tooth to remain a toxic foci of infection to the body. And a lot of times we find that there is a very strong connection between sinus infections, between heart disease, between allergies, between all kinds of immune system problems, cancer, and root canals. The toxins that leak out of a root canal are 80 to 100 times more virulent than botulism. And, you know, we will always look at the dental history of our patients in evaluating their long-term and their chronic illnesses. The mercury toxicity is such a huge problem. And we treat a lot of autism, a lot of learning disorder in children and adults. And there really is no scientific controversy that mercury is one of the worst neural toxins known to man. The neurons have an extreme affinity for it. It leaches from the teeth into the brain and lymphatic tissue and surrounding tissues in the form of a very toxic form of mercury vapor called methylmercury. And it literally incapacitates the nervous system. So the list of toxic symptoms that a person who has mercury toxicity it can be just enormous, and these can include and will always almost include cognitive dysfunction, learning disabilities, immune system problems, allergies, hormonal problems, because the mercury will actually block the receptor sites, so your endocrine glands may be working fine, but and your blood hormone levels, which we don't take, which we consider a pretty worthless test, because the blood hormone levels can be normal, but if the receptor sites are blocked from mercury or heavy metal, they're not going to do you much good. And it's very interesting to see that the if you look at a list of the symptoms of autism, it is almost exactly the same as a list of the symptoms of mercury toxicity. And now we know that the thimerosal, you know, that has been used as a preservative in all the childhood vaccines and is also in the flu vaccines, is mercury. And it's put in there actually to preserve the virus, that the viruses that they're injecting into your body so that the immune system can't recognize the virus, which is the same thing that it does in your body. So,
okay, let's take it a little further. How should a patient consider when undergoing root canal or extractions? Because now they go in, the dentist says, look, you've got some bad teeth here. If I either can pull the teeth or I can do some root canal. If we do root canal, we can save the tooth. So most people want to save their teeth, and so they'll go that route. So tell us what your feelings are about what you found when you've looked at the pros and cons of root canal or extractions.
Okay, if we almost always recommend an extraction if there's any way to bridge the tooth. And the extraction, again, must be done by a biologic dentist who understands that the periodontal ligament needs to be excavated when you do an extraction. A lot of people, 80% of the extractions done, because they're done improperly, produce something called a cavitation, which is an infected pocket in that jaw area. The skin heals up and the bone is not scraped and the periodontal ligament isn't scraped, and they get a necrotic, osteonecrotic, gangrenous infection in there. And I've seen literally hundreds of these opened in dentist's office and have seen this infected mess from where a tooth was pulled or at the base of a root canal. And the strange thing is these don't show up on x-rays. Less than 50% of them show up on x-rays. And a regular dentist isn't going to be able to even tell you from the kind of x-rays he does because it's not far enough down most of the time into the jawbone. So it's really a problem, Gary. We have some very sophisticated ways of diagnosing these cavitations or these undiagnosed infections in the jawbone.
Explain how that's done.
Oh, boy. Well, one of the new methods we're using is the computerized thermography, which can tell whether the body is regulating in that area. And if it's not regulating, it indicates infection. We also use ART testing, autonomic response testing, which is a form of kinesiology testing. And it is very accurate. I can tell you that we have never gone in and excavated a cavitation where we believe there was one that we didn't find one. And this is in the face of them absolutely almost never showing up on an x-ray. And the other way we can test is the EAV testing. Like we use an avatar, but there's a lot of different machines.
What are you testing for? In other words, let's pull back for a moment and assume that you're the average person. Assume that when a doctor goes in, a dentist goes in and cleans out a pocket, that the pocket is clean. You're saying that that's not necessarily the case. It could be bacteria that could lead to some very serious illness that is still in there. So tell us what exactly you're measuring.
Well, we're measuring whether that bone in the jaw has healed up or whether there's an infection, which is called a foci, and which can leak toxins over a period of time and, you know, into the body, and it's something that the immune system has to constantly fight against in order to contain. And this is called a cavitation. And often when we open these things up, they're huge holes full of infection, and then we send off a sample and we biopsy it, and it will come back, you know, positive to some sort of infection. But if you've had...
Okay, so now we have that you've opened up a pocket. You've taken out some pus. You're measuring the pus. How will that impact upon other conditions in the body the person may not relate the two?
Okay, well, most people's symptomology improves immediately. We go in and we scrape out the infection and use, you know, different remedies that are tested that will be potent against these virulent strain of pathogens. At that point, in many, many, many cases, the chronic sinusitis, the chronic edema maybe, or the chronic infection in the lymph glands, or the chronic headaches, or the chronic pain, or the chronic neurological symptoms will alleviate immediately. We have people that will tell us, even before the anesthesia is completely worn off, that they can feel a difference. Often, their heart will feel different. They'll be able to feel like less anxiety. Anxiety is one of the big symptoms of in a lot of cases. But they will feel different. They'll feel different as soon as this pocket is opened. And it can be completely asymptomatic in the sense that they have no idea that this infection exists in their mouth until we find it.
So you're saying that a person may have an infection in the mouth that also translates to joint pain, to fibromyalgia, to multiple sclerosis, or other conditions, heart disease, because the bacteria can migrate, and the energy systems that are interrelated also can be adversely affected.
Absolutely. One of the great tests that was done, one of the great studies that was done, was Weston Price's study when he took a piece of a root canal tooth out of a dead person, and he say that person died of heart disease, and he took a tiny sliver from a root canal tooth in that person and he injected it under the skin of a rabbit, and within 3 days the rabbit would be dead from the same disease that the person had, and he was able to duplicate and reproduce these results over and over and over and over again. So there is definitely a connection, which is well known and well understood by the European doctors, and slowly beginning to be understood here in this country.
Okay, Linda, I appreciate this information. Thank you. We only have 2.5 minutes. Tell us what you would do to help remedy it. Where do you start the process of changing this?
Go to somebody, go to a biological dentist. You know, make sure that your dentist doesn't use mercury, and understands why they're not using mercury, just not because it's cosmetic, you know, but because there's a very definite impact on the health of the body, and has not been using mercury for a number of years, and has been studying biological dentistry, and understands cavitations. Ask them if they understand cavitations, and ask them what their opinion on root canals are. And from there, you're going to be able to make an informed choice as to whether you're with the right dentist or not. They should be doing biocompatibility testing before they put anything in your mouth. Anything that is put in your mouth needs to be tested to make sure that it is biocompatible, it is acceptable to your immune system, and that you don't have allergies to.
So you would ask for the Lewinsky test. Linda, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on and sharing your insights. Now, let's take a 60-second station ID break, come back and take a look at something in-depth, and that is medicine of the possible. We'll be back in a moment.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. Coming up at 1 o'clock will be The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, trying to help you lead a more positively minded life. And on today's program, people who space out. So you want to stay tuned for that, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. It's 12:31. Back to natural living with Gary Null.
I'd like to welcome all of you who've just joined us. I'm Gary Null. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. This is something for just the people in the New York City area. I always like to give a little plug for people who are doing some good work. And we have Arlene and Alex Pisaldis over in, in Whitestone, Queens. They have a not-for-profit organic food co-op. And they're distributing organic fruits and vegetables at cost. And they're looking for other individuals and families that would be interested in joining with them. And so I'm going to give you their phone number. It's the Organic Not-for-Profit Food Co-op in Whitestone, Queens. They're forming to help individuals have very inexpensive organic produce. Good for you. 718-460-1472. So hopefully people will help support their community and help support their own health in the process. Let's go over now and say hello to my next guest, Dr. Raima Laibow, L-A-I-B-O-W. Dr. Laibow is the medical director of the Alexandria Institute of Natural and Integrative Medicine in Croton-on-the-Hudson, New York. She graduated from Albert Einstein Medical School in 1970 and has been what is called a drug-free physician. No, that doesn't mean she's using smack on the side or ever has. It means that she doesn't use medications in the sense that the average doctor relies upon them. She treats a body as an integrated whole using an eclectic array of innovative medical techniques. Let's find out what she's doing and how her patients are doing. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Gary.
Let's first start with what makes you so different as a drug-free physician, since most doctors rely very much on drugs. So what's your philosophy of medicine?
Well, my philosophy of medicine, Gary, is that, first of all, we have to find the underlying cause of whatever the symptom or problem, disease, malady, or ailment is that the patient comes in with. And then we have to do that at as deep a level as possible and repair the underlying problem, which may be leading to other things that don't appear to be related at all, but are all connected in this wonderful web of life that we are. And at the same time, help the patient with the symptoms to keep them comfortable if necessary. But allopathic medicine, conventional medicine, is designed to suppress symptoms. That's a very poor way to go about things. And I'm sure you and your listeners will agree with that and are already committed to that philosophy. The reason I don't use drugs is that all drugs work by poisoning enzyme systems. That strikes me as a very foolish way to try to get the body to be well and to get the mind and the emotions, heart and spirit to be well, because you need every enzyme system you've got. And instead of poisoning it, why don't we support them? Why don't we help the body become well? That's my job, to work with the patient in a partnership to help the patient become as well as possible and move from a lack of symptoms, which is where health lies, to radiant well-being.
Well, let's take a look at some of the unique treatments you offer your patients, and also let's get into bioenergetic field enhancement. What does it mean? What does it do? How does it work?
Well, let's talk about some of the treatments that we use in our office. Now, when a patient comes to see me, we don't just focus on one symptom. As I said, if there's an underlying problem, we look for the ways that are most efficient and most profound to correct that problem and everything that springs from it. So we might be working on four or five different modalities at the same time, all designed to help the system regulate itself. One of the systems that we use is neurobiofeedback, and I know that you and your listeners have heard some presentations about neurobiofeedback. My use of neurobiofeedback is a little different from what you've heard about so far, because it's used as a medical tool. And, oh, by the way, I believe that it needs to be used. I hear music.
We just have some kind of technical glitch there.
Okay.
We'll try to correct it.
Okay.
I'll ask my engineer to get on it. Please continue and your answer.
Okay. We just tuned into the cosmic information flow, I guess.
It happens.
It does happen. So So we use neurobiofeedback as a medical tool in conjunction with nutritional medicine and the other things that we do, because the brain is the central command and control unit. And if you give it the information necessary to regulate or re-regulate itself, it will reorganize itself and the entire system at a profound, profound level. We use lymphatic detoxification procedures using something called the light beam generator, which
uses... I want you to, before you go into what you do, just be aware that recently there was an article written in one of the main publications stating that there is no such thing as a detoxification program. There is nothing wrong with the lymphatic system. It doesn't back up. There's no toxins in the lymphatic system. I was going to respond to it on my own show on an upcoming program, but I'll give you that opportunity to do so now.
Well, less than 10 years ago, the New England Journal of Medicine published an article saying without question there was no nutritional influence whatsoever on the immune system, that to think that there was to subscribe to folklore. So articles get published and articles come and articles go, beliefs come and beliefs go. The issue is what's dearly loved in the conventional medical world at the moment, evidence-based medicine. And when you come, when you treat patients who have been everywhere, who have done everything, and who are still either terminally ill or intractably ill, and you start working on such things as lymphatic detoxification, or you start working with a lymphedema patient, either post-surgical or not post-surgical, lymphedema patient for whom the treatments of conventional medicine are woefully inadequate, or a fibromyalgia patient for whom the treatments of conventional medicine are woefully inadequate, and you start applying the procedures and means that we're talking about, which are first of all non-toxic and second of all effective ways of helping the body regulate itself, you certainly appear to get durable and profound results by doing what we think of as detoxification. As you know, there's great controversy over any kind of emerging idea inside conventional medicine, inside conventional science, and outside of it. Just because somebody published something simply tells us that they believe that, or at least they're saying it. I don't know what it means to say that there is no such thing as lymphatic toxification when conventional medicine in Germany, in Italy, in France, and indeed in the United States makes it very clear that there is such a thing as a toxic lymph system. It's just that up until recently there hasn't been a whole lot we could do about it other than manual lymphatic drainage, because there's very little that can be done other than some homeopathic remedies to detoxify the lymphatic congestion. You know, the lymphatic system is a very interesting one. About 50% of the protein in the in our blood is outside of the blood vessels at any one time. It is in the tissues. How does it get back? It gets back into the system, the vascular system, through the action of the lymphatic system. And that's a very, very complicated part of our being. If those proteins clump together, they become too large to move by osmotic pressure or by pressure gradients. Therefore, they get stuck in the tissue and they hold water and toxins by chemical and mechanical means. Now, something like the light beam generator causes a change in the field around those proteins. And this is a this is not a a psychic field. This is a physical, measurable field. The proteins acquire similar charges. They therefore push away the way two poles, two south poles of a magnet or two north poles of a magnet push away from one another. That allows the lymphatic flow to go from a gel, like toothpaste, to a sol, like water, and be moved into the lymphatic system and eventually back into the vascular system to be processed. There certainly is lymphatic stagnation. It's a recognized part of medicine. There is wonderful treatment for it with a light beam generator. I don't see the problem.
Okay, then show us what a light beam generator is and how it works.
Sure. Light beam generator is a marvelous device which has two heads on long flexible cords. The heads are filled with a mixture of noble gases, that is to say non-reactive gases like helium, argon, neon. Now, when you pump electrons into a suitable mix of gases, you get photons, you get light. We call that fluorescent light. When you pump photons into a suitable mix of gas, you get energy, electrons. And that energy, when the heads are placed suitably on the body, that energy moves into the tissues and, as I said, causes the proteins which are stuck together to move apart, causes the lymphatic flow to be enhanced. And it's a remarkably important advance in the treatment of chronic diseases. Why chronic diseases? Because we are learning that every chronic disease, every degenerative disease, has an inflammatory component. That inflammatory component involves lymph stagnation, by definition. We know now that many heart disease conditions involve chlamydia. We know that many arthritis conditions involve Klebsiella and other organisms. And the way that they are damaging, of course, they also involve the leaky gut, but the way that they are damaging is through the inflammatory cascade of negative events. Well, the light beam generator, in a non-toxic, non-invasive, very gentle way, removes that impediment to healing and allows the body to return to its own homeostatic state. It's a wonderful technique.
All right, now let's. I appreciate that. Thank you. Let's. There are several areas I want to give you now.
Can I quickly list some of the other things
into,
we do or not?
How do you approach brain injury and stroke?
Okay.
And Alzheimer's.
That's
Parkinson's,
a wonderful set of questions. That's
and the conditions that we're seeing a baby boomer generation now suffering from at a very high level, something that is only going to get worse unless we do something.
Well, it's only going to get worse if we don't do the kind of thing that you've been telling people to do, which is change our nutrition, change our lifestyle, and protect our immune systems from the toxic environment which we're unfortunately surrounded by and immersed in. Let me quickly say some of the other things that we do involve electrical stimulation to reverse the negative charge of injury of cells, light therapy, especially 660 nanometer light frequency is very, very important to healing cells, provocative neutralization to deal with allergy and to actually train the body to no longer be allergic, IV and oral chelation, nutritional medicine, psychobiological integration, because if the perceptual system doesn't change, then things don't tend to change. There is no real separation between the mind and the body. It's one unit. You have to attend to all of it. And, of course, detoxification protocols, both for the lymph and the liver. And for Alzheimer's, for Parkinson's, for the other degenerative and neurodegenerative diseases, what I do is assess not only the presenting symptoms, like the tremor of Alzheimer's or the frozen facies or the lack of associated hand movements when the patient comes in and the feet frozen to the floor. Certainly, those make the diagnosis of Parkinson's. But what I do is also look for the system-wide issues that are associated with and, even more importantly, that underlie the development of that degenerative disease. I use advanced lab testing, like many of the people who have been on your show, and then I put it together and pull out the armamentarium tools that I have to individualize a protocol for each patient. It's a highly individualized way of working, and it takes a lot of focus and time. You can't do this in an HMO context. You simply can't. There's no way that an initial interview of 7 minutes is going to allow you to zero in on the depth that's necessary and start this treatment plan and program. My initial interview is 2.5 hours or more. And that's only the beginning because there's so much to learn. In Alzheimer's, not only do we have to remove the heavy metals that we're all so familiar with, the aluminum and so on, not only do we have to address very intensively the fatty acid balance because, you know, the brain
Okay, but put yourself in the position of a person right now who might have any of these conditions and you're speaking with. Not only do we have to address these things, but you're not addressing them. That's like saying, God, there's so much I could tell you about how the earth began. It would take forever. Now, let's talk about, you know, the Ferris wheel at Coney Island. And you think, well, wait a second. Tell me what you can tell me in the period of time you can tell me in about these conditions. So let's give it, let's not jump from one to another because we've given them absolutely nothing that can help them. Zero. I want facts. So let's stop and go over one issue at a time and let's tell them what you know you can do about Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Let's give protocols. Let's give advice. This program is about resources and tools. My purpose is simple. When a person finishes listening to this radio program each day, they will absolutely positively bet your life on it, know something they did not know, or have a tool they did not know they was available, or have a reinforcement of something they already believed in but maybe hadn't exercised. That's the point of it. So I want you to give us the benefit of those tools that you can share with us now, all right?
Okay. For a patient with Alzheimer's, it's absolutely essential to increase blood flow in the brain. And in order to do that, the best tool that I know of is neurobiofeedback. So that's a number one. That can either be done in the office of the doctor or it can be done at home using a telemedicine protocol, which we do with patients who live at some distance from us. They're trained here. We send them home with equipment, and they communicate with us every time they do a session and once a week by telephone. But to increase blood flow is absolutely essential to get nutrients in and to get waste materials out, point one. Point number, and that has to be done a minimum of 3 times a week. 5 times a week is better. It's a half-hour treatment protocol, and it's vitally important. Point number two, the fatty acids have to be addressed. I would do a fatty acid analysis on the patient's red blood cells, and I would create a nutritional and supplemental program or corrective program to address the issues of arachidonic acid, of omega-3 fatty acids, omega-6 and omega-9s, because when they are out of balance, the brain makes aberrant or pathological fatty acids such as Meade's acid, and that immediately interferes with the membrane functioning, and the brain in a neurodegenerative disease must be brought back to a an optimal fatty acid balance. The issue of dietary intake in terms of trans fatty acids and cis acids is incredibly important. Patients with Alzheimer's have got to change their diet, or the caregivers have got to change their diet and give them the appropriate kind of uncontaminated, pesticide-free foods, vegetables. The body has to be alkalinized to allow neuroregeneration to take place. So diet is tremendously important, and nutrient supplementation, especially electrolyte supplementation.
Be specific. What kind of diet, what kind of foods, what kind of juices, what kind of nutrients, what kind of electrolytes, what ranges?
Well, you're asking me to be specific about a disease when I prefer, and I work much better, being specific about a patient, because the issue is what's wrong with the patient's body, not what's wrong that it with the disease condition. I don't know, for instance, if patient A and patient B are sitting in front of me, both of whom have Alzheimer's. First of all, they may be at different stages of the disease, and second of all, they both have very different nutritional deficits to start with, so I can't give a supplementation program for somebody that I don't know. I can give a supplementation program for somebody that I do know through interview, laboratory testing, and assessment. How can I possibly give a range for somebody who may weigh 93 pounds and somebody else who may weigh 127 pounds? And somebody who may weigh 300 pounds. It's not possible. It has to be individualized. I can't treat the disease. I have to treat the individual.
Okay, but you and I would approach this radically different. And with all due respect, the most of the people who are sick listening in an audience are not going to be able to go to a particular clinician. Either A, they can't afford it, because the payback, and a lot of times, and I've had this happen about 10,000 times, is people hear someone interesting on the show, and then go to their office and where they had, arthritis and end up having a stroke because they get the bill. And all of them are the same. They all have all new tests, no matter how relevant the previous tests were, because, quote, it's their laboratory. Of course, I also happen to know a lot goes on in these laboratories, and especially two guys who ran a laboratory that had a bad habit of working too closely with doctors to get patients and their blood workup sent their way. And so people are sitting now here and listening to you in California, Oregon, Vermont, and they're saying, okay, there's something I could do on my own. There's something I could do in spite of the fact I may be limited. Not all caretakers have the resources to get to a person, and if you had everyone at one time who needed your help, you wouldn't have enough hours in a day. So I would start by saying, here's what we know should be done, could be done, and you could do a lot of it on your own. Like,
you can't cure Alzheimer's on your own.
There are certain neuroenhancers like phosphatidylserine. Now, the individual dose, that can be guided by the individual therapist. And there are certainly books and protocols out there that give a range. And we all have to start at a lower range and gradually increment up to see what our ideal level is till we start feeling and better and seeing some relief in our pain. Same way with juicing. I never say start with 6 glasses of vegetable organic juice a day. Start with 1, even diluted. Select the vegetables that you like. But at least start, because chlorophyll is a chelator. The very thing you were talking about to help with those mercury fillings, because not everyone can even get mercury out. In some areas of America, no dentist where they live will take them out. They're afraid of losing their license. So we're not always dealing with the ideal of what a person can do, so they have to do something that at least accommodates some change. Vitamin C is an oral chelator. Red clover is an oral chelator. Astragalus pallidarco help with bacterial and viral infections to turn off local inflammation around joints, including in the mouth.
They certainly
by
do,
giving them a range, let's say, of vitamin C from 1,000 at the low end in divided doses, about every 4 hours, to a high of 2,000 milligrams, and gradually building up to where they could get a doctor, hopefully, that would give them intravenous vitamin C. At least they're making progress. Now, using a non-medical model and using a non-drug approach, we've been able to see thousands upon thousands of people, including people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. In fact, just Saturday, a guy with Parkinson's stood up in a health support group and talked about the enormous changes that he had made. In fact, we filmed him yesterday for an upcoming special we're doing on changes people can make. Now, it's immaterial to me whether medicine says, well, it's all in his head. For him, when his hands no longer are trembling, when he no longer has involuntary body movements, when he can go to sleep at night and actually sleep, that's real. So I'm suggesting there is a range that we can do something.
Let's talk about chelators.
Otherwise, it's come to my office, let me give you the proper test, let me put you on a protocol, or, you know, then I have to deal in gross generalities. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand, but I disagree with part of what you're saying, and I have to be frank about that. Let's talk, for instance, about chelation. Yes, vitamin C is a chelator. Glutathione is a chelator. People go out and they buy glutathione because they think that glutathione is a chelator, so that's going to help them, not knowing that oral glutathione, unless it's in the whey protein format, is almost useless because it doesn't get into the cells where it needs to go.
That's not true. Unfortunately, it's not true. And I'm going to challenge on this. Reduce glutathione with N-acetylcysteine and quercetin has a high absorption, and we've tested it. It is the non-reduced glutathione that will cause the problem. So as long as you go into a health food store, and now almost all the people in health food stores are aware of the fact that it's only reduced glutathione with N-acetylcysteine, which is the precursor, that you can get it in the cell almost at 35%.
Gary, what you're saying is, how can people do self-help medicine for the most serious degenerative diseases of our time, which are increasing in frequency, when they have wildly different medical platforms from which to start? And the answer is, if they could, that would be marvelous. And some people can. They hit the the right recipe, so to speak, from self-help information. And I'm a big fan of self-help information. I lecture widely. I talk to people about what they can do. I'm not saying that I'm the only doctor that can help people. I'm saying that there are things that they can do for themselves, which they learn about from your show and from your books and from other people's information. But there are also things that they need guidance for. And, for instance, neurobiofeedback is an immensely important, benign, and helpful tool. It's not a self-help device. It's not a self-help treatment. It shouldn't be done on a self-help basis. But it should be done under the guidance of somebody who knows precisely what they're doing.
And I would agree with you. That's not the disagreement. The agreement is if we had every doctor in America who had your knowledge and background, so when a patient with any of these conditions went to them, they could be helped. That's good. But I'm saying that there are 3 million people going to listen to this radio program. You're going to be swamped with calls. You're not going to be able to handle 1,000th of the people who can need your help, even if they could afford it. And I don't even know what you charge. So I take a different approach, asking them to look for others who do have these specializations, who can help. But above and beyond all that, the stronger you get your immune system. Look, we're doing nothing medical without ever seeing a doctor, except for the ones that originally diagnosed them for their Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and told them there was nothing that could be done, just give them some medication for the side effects. These people have made major turnarounds or major improvements just by changing the diet,
absolutely,
beginning exercising, taking
absolutely
proper supplements, and detoxification.
Absolutely. If people,
by getting the immune system to that level, then if they're able at that point or could afford or have the resources to get to a clinician to get more specific and guided help, all the better. I just know how many people will come up to me on the street and say, hey, I heard a nice guest on your phone, you know, your show, and I called, but I couldn't afford it. And so, you know, or they're too far away. I'm in Mexico, New Mexico, and, you know, they're in New Jersey. So I believe that we have to look. If you were in my shoes, you would have a little different perspective.
No doubt.
Of what it means to try to help as many people make the first step or second step as we can be practical.
You're not asking.
Now, we're out of time, and I thank you very much for being on. And, again, my guest sharing insights on just one aspect. And let's be clear, this is just one aspect of what we can do today for conditions as wide-ranging as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and the immune system.
Is Dr.
Rima,
R-I-M-A,
Laibow, L-A-I-B-O-W. She's on Croton on the Hudson. In the final second here, at least for those who live in New York City, there's going to be a cooking class, a very interesting cooking class, probably one of the best you've ever had. It'll be on the 18th, the 25th, the 2nd, and the 9th of this month and next month. I'll give you a number to call. Call 212-343-2990. 212-343-2990 for more information. Have a good day, and I'll see you tomorrow.